Support comes from the Arizona Inn, a Four Diamond, family-owned historic resort hotel and restaurant on Elm Street near the U of A. Information is at arizonainn.com.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jim Nintzel, your host for Zona Politics here on KXCI 91.3 FM. And we are talking today with Congressman Raul Grijalva, who is joining us to talk about what's happening both in Washington, here in Arizona, and the rest of the world, it seems. Congressman, welcome to Zona Politics.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here and appreciate the invitation, Jim.
So in 2016, you endorsed Bernie Sanders. You are now supporting Elizabeth Warren in the 2020 race. Why the switch to Team Warren?
I know, and that's a question that people is there. First of all, this is not, you know, this endorsement of Senator Warren is not in any way a repudiation of Bernie. I think what Senator Sanders has done for progressive politics in this country is essentially put it at the same level of discussion within the Democratic Party that it merited for many, many years. And I think history will be kind to the senator for doing just that, mainstreaming that discussion, which had not happened before, and for during that primary being the insurgent, being the one to carry that flag. So nothing but my respect and admiration for the man. The issue with my endorsement of Elizabeth is this simple. You know, we're going to go into a race and we're going to, unless something happens and a silver bullet is discovered, whether, you know, while I'm for impeachment and have been for a long time, the fact remains that this question of Trumpism and the aberration that we're seeing in our politics right now from him and who he has brought into the swamp, we're going to have to beat him at the polls. And I think that Senator Warren is kind of one to coalesce some people, coalesce his community. And I think that she is bringing progressive politics to that stage as well. And it's early on. I think she's gaining momentum, and I think she's going to continue to gain momentum. But my endorsement for her is just that I really felt that if we're going to have a one-on-one with Trump, I thought she matches up the best. And more importantly, you know, I agree with their politics. And so, like any voter, you know, you gravitate toward the ones that you agree with. And I really have been impressed with her. I've been impressed with the fact that not only is she intellectually has the capacity and is very smart, she also has the heart for this fight and the compassion that's going to be needed in this race to counterpoint what I think is this aberration, which is Donald Trump.
And you mentioned that you do support impeachment. Of course, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi does not seem on board with that. Why do you think, what is your grounds for seeking impeachment?
It's the issue of capacity. It's the issue of the violation of the rule of law. It's the issue of the threat to our democracy. It is the 10 points that were in the Mueller report about the obstruction of justice. And it is beyond that. It is, I think, the culture of conflict and corruption that have been introduced into our administration at every level. You know, I can only, you know, from the Natural Resources Committee and from that position that I have there, just watching what's going on with Interior, EPA, and also in the Education Department, where they're systematically dismantling protections around the environment. And systematically, as we saw in Rosemont, and as we're seeing with the project by the San Pedro Benguetto, that the forced intimidation of people having to change reports, of people ignoring science, you know, that is, to me, again, grounds for impeachment on many levels. But I think, you know, just the threat to our democracy, the ignoring the rule of law, and the corruption that's gone into this administration, I think are all verifiable. I think they're all factual. I think there's empirical information that's available. And the impunity of this president to ignore an equal branch of government, which is the U.S. House of Representatives, and essentially thumb his nose at our request for witnesses, our request for investigative materials, our request for any information that deals to how they do their decision-making. When you have the former head lobbyist for energy now in charge of Interior, when you have a person that spent most of their career fighting the Bureau of Land Management, which controls 225 million acres in this country, that now that person is in charge of that, those conflicts and trying to expedite the extraction of resources from public lands with no consideration for conservation, for habitat, the efforts to dismantle the Endangered Species Act, the public participation arm of NEPA, the environment being dismantled as well. All those are points to greed and a profit motive. So my decision was based on the man's capacity and the consequences of the actions that he's taken. I think those are still strong and they remain strong. The fact that our leadership in the House doesn't want to move forward on that is, I think, more of a political calculation saying, how do we retain a majority? I happen to believe that if we are not bold in challenging this president, even an impeachment inquiry so that the courts will force the information to be forthcoming, force the witnesses to come before Congress and talk and give testimony under oath, those would be, if for no other reason than to get that going, I think it would be important to move forward minimal with the impeachment inquiry.
You tackled a lot there, particularly on the environment. I want to get back to that. But I want to talk first about immigration, because, of course, that's a huge issue here in Arizona and one that you've been deeply involved with for some time. And, you know, the Trump administration is now looking at detaining of minors, I think, is what I really want to talk about. And the efforts to detain families together and the efforts and some of the conditions we've seen with the minors in some of these facilities. And I just want to get your take on what you're seeing with the kids.
Well, you know, the latest executive initiative by Trump and his advisors, and particularly Miller, who has been a rabid anti-immigrant advocate for many years, Cuccinelli now in a position to do the same, and his track record is equally as xenophobic as Miller's and Trump's. All these things have consequences. You know, the racism, the bigotry that was generated against immigrants have consequences. And, you know, one can point to El Paso, but we can point to the rise in hate crimes for all the southwestern states against Latinos in particular, but specifically against immigrants across the Southwest. And I mention that because those are the consequences of what I believe to be a campaign strategy and a political strategy to make this division, to make it us versus them, to make it a culture war about what is America becoming and not becoming. And to do that as a strategy, I think, is not only cynical, but what we saw with the kids, where they try to undo a Florida settlement decision, a judicial precedent that said minors must be treated with care and compassion, detention to expedite and to release these children as quickly as possible. I think the limit was maybe 20 days of any detention. And when you see the for-profit prison industry that primarily detains people that are been apprehended by DHS, Border Patrol, and ICE, and the profits that they're making, and the fact that, you know, kids have died there, sexual abuse has occurred there, the squalid conditions that have been found there, all these indignities, these cruelties that are going on, that's part of that strategy that I said earlier. You know, the rumblings that now we're going to put public schools and educators in the position to turn in people based on the status of parents and the children that are at their schools, and those continue to mount. Changing the amnesty law, changing the immigration law entirely so that it becomes, they call it merit-based, but it's not. It's about how much money, it's about wealth, and family unification has been thrown out, DACA, the TPS. All those, I think, are part and parcel, and for the next 15 months, we're going to hear, unfortunately, Jim, more and more ugliness and attempts to make the situation worse than it already is.
Let me ask you this. The Trump administration is now pushing this public charge rule that makes it harder for any immigrants who rely on government assistance to come. And you called this yet another way for Trump to scapegoat immigrants and make their lives miserable. And talk about what you think this new rule means.
It means that parents, let's just talk about parents right now, for can't access prenatal care, like WIC, for their citizen children. They can't access nutrition programs for their blended families. And if you're a legal permanent resident and you're not entitled to any of the benefits, even though your status is legal and permanent, this is setting up a situation where more and more people will be denied their naturalization as citizens, where more and more people will be then open for deportation, even though they're legal and permanent, because now you have another tool, this administration, to make life miserable, but also to expedite the rationales for deportation. It's a deportation strategy, and this is part of it.
Let me ask you about the wall building, because the Supreme Court has cleared the way for the Trump administration to move forward on these border walls based on his emergency declaration, which is essentially going around Congress's authority to set your spending priorities. And we're seeing these walls start to go up now.
Yeah, it's the 68 miles. There's a, you know, the Center for Biological Diversity has got an extension of about 45 days. In terms of their very important hearing that's coming up relative to what it does to habitat, what it does to species. And so, you know, that some parts of that court case will continue. But the 5-4 decision that essentially said Trump, it's okay for Trump to ignore the appropriations process, ignore the Congress, and go and take money from, in this instance, defense, and use it for this purpose under the guise of a national emergency, I think it speaks very dangerously about where we're going to go in this direction. The 68 miles that are going to affect us down here are, you know, Oregon Pipe and what it does to that particular piece of public land and public land. It speaks to other areas along the border. But what it does is that it not only jeopardizes a conservation species habitat ethic that's been there forever, but you know, with the real ID, then that 100 miles from the border, people basically have no protections. Native Americans have no protections over sacred sites and burials, which is law, but that's suspended. Clean air, clean water, that's suspended. Endangered Species Act, that's suspended. Public input, suspended. And so you're looking at, I think this is another very dangerous part of what Trump is doing with this wall, is that in that 100-mile area, people that live there, which include us, basically don't have the same rights as anybody else in the United States, because those basic civil liberties, those laws that were put in to provide protection and process are gone. They get to be suspended or essentially waived in order to expedite wall construction, regardless of the environmental consequences, economic consequences. They have the right to do that. And you know, so this challenges that are going on legally by states and by individual organizations, I mentioned one, are right now, quite frankly, the last bastion of defense against this. And it's very troubling very scary.
If you're just tuning in, I'm your host for Zone of Politics, Jim Nintzel, and we're talking with Congressman Raul Grijalva. And Congressman, a federal judge has said the Rosemont Mine project is on hold until the Forest Service reviews the plan it approves, saying that the approval was fundamentally flawed because the owners never established that the federal land they want to dump their tailings on has actual valuable minerals and they have a valid claim to it. It's a unique ruling that is sending some concern through the mining industry. As someone who has long called for an update to the 1872 Mining Act, you supported this decision?
Oh, absolutely. I think what Judge Soto there said, a very important precedent. And, you know, the mining industry, as powerful as it is, has been shook deeply by this decision. In that, you know, part of the problem is that we're working with a mining law from 1872. And where go west, young man mentality. So things were done to expedite the movement of people and the extraction of resources from this area. That mining law carries no royalties. People could take whatever precious mineral out of the ground and on public lands and not pay one red cent of royalties back to the taxpayer in terms of mitigation, whether it's closing abandoned mines, of which we have a $4 billion tab in Arizona alone, or mitigating dangers. Nothing. Nothing is available. The other issue is that we're going to be promoting, when we get back, our reform bill to that mining law. The three big differences that you're going to see there is the royalties to be paid on the extraction, two, that sacred sites, burial, et cetera, for Native nations and for Indigenous people will be moved up to a top-tier must-study mandate instead of doing it after the fact or not doing it at all. And then the last thing, which is going to be where the real fight will occur, is the ability for land agencies to say no, that there are some places you can't. I use the example, you know, of the Grand Canyon, where the legislation that we have is to permanently ban uranium mining from around the Grand Canyon. And we should be able to say no to that because of the need to protect the Grand Canyon. I tell people it's the Grand Canyon, stupid. I mean, what are you messing with here in terms of contamination? Water, the Colorado River, the dependency that four states have on that river for their sustenance, and the Grand Canyon itself. So those are going to be the three big changes we're going to promote there because they're essential. And the ability to say no as an option, as opposed to what it is now, which you can't say no, you have to eventually say yes, regardless. And I think the judge's decision by separating those was actually legally really well thought out. And I think it's a precedent that's highly defensible going up any appeal. And I think the mining industry is having to think twice about how they're going to handle this. But we're going to follow it up with the reform package on the mining law.
And we'll see where the courts go on this. I want to shift gears again to the Trump administration instituting what's being called a gag rule regarding the Title X family planning dollars. They say that healthcare organizations are ineligible for the dollars if they refer pregnant women to abortion services. As a result, this week, Planned Parenthood said they would no longer participate in the program, which covers birth control, STD treatment, cancer screenings, and the like for low-income women. Your reaction to this?
We already have in the law something that there's efforts always to take it out is the Hyde Amendment that effectively prohibited federal money from going to institutions that provide abortions. Now you have this gag rule that the administration is putting forward, which effectively closes the door on poor women from being able to access a full complementary comprehensive health services around reproduction and their prerogatives and their ability under Roe versus Wade to be able to make decisions for themselves with the consultation of health professionals, family, etc. But Planned Parenthood not doing this, the resources available to women, and particularly women with limited income, poor women, are going to become scarce, if any. And I think that not only is it discriminatory in against poor people, it's discriminatory in its entirety against women. And that's been the mantra. That's been the culture wars that this administration feels are appropriate for them to take on. And it is just another example, as I said earlier, about the aberration that we're seeing here, where it's not a matter of turning back the clock. You've turned it into a complete culture war on issues that many Americans felt were settled. And here we are again.
And the House budget, I believe, already blocks the gag rule. So it looks like the battle over this will be fought in the Senate and, of course, in the courts, as Planned Parenthood has filed lawsuits over this gag rule. But any sense of where this might go in the Senate?
No, because you have Czar Mitch, Moscow Mitch, whatever people want to call him, who has effectively used this presidency to get his judicial appointments and to put in effect his ideological leanings. One shouldn't underestimate McConnell. I mean, he's a power source right now. He can block, he can move, and essentially he's blocked almost everything the Senate the House has put forward. 5 months ago, we sent him the background check bill on guns, blocked.
Yeah, and that was one I actually wanted to bring up with you because, of course, since you guys passed that bill, we just had these mass shootings. Well, we have a lot of mass shootings in this country, but we had the big ones in El Paso and Dayton. For a few days there, it looked like President Trump initially seemed to support stronger background checks. He seems to be backing off from that now. And as you said, that bill's been on hold in the Senate. And, you know, there's some talk maybe it will move when they get back. You have any sort of faith that that might happen?
Based on the comments that Trump has made today and after his discussion with Wayne LaPierre from the NRA, he stated, I think we have enough background checks. We have to look at other things, you know, mental illness. He said we need to have more mental institutions as a way to deal with the issue of gun safety and gun violence in this country, not to mention the fact that the NRA spent $30 million in helping elect this president in the last election. And I guess they're on the hook now again, if nothing happens, to do the same. But, you know, 90% of the people support background checks. 60%+ of the people support banning assault weapons. There's no other use for them other than warfare and to kill people. And closing the loopholes at gun shows. And the list goes on because, you know, red flag, okay, I support that. Background checks, I support that. But there are other things, and banning assault weapons being on the top of my list and many people's list as a way that it was in effect for 10 years, and the level of violence and deaths caused by automatic weapons went down. As soon as it was reinstated, that correlation of more of them being used, and we've seen them on these major mass murder situations, it's been automatic weapons. And I think that the American people want that as well. It is one of those situations that we find ourselves in where not just on a bipartisan, Republican, Democrat, Independent, whatever, that 90% of the people want background checks. I don't know how they're going to dance around that politically, but it's raised itself to be a really very, very prominent issue in this next cycle of elections.
I want to, and if you're just tuning in here, we are talking with Congressman Raul Grijalva on Zona Politics. I'm your host, Jim Ninsel. And Congressman, it appears that city voters will decide whether to designate Tucson as a sanctuary city in November. This has support from the local Democratic Party, but Mayor Rothschild and the rest of the Tucson City Council say that they do not support it. What's your take on this one?
Yeah, I think I think that support is based on the fact that that, you know, the state could deal with their shared revenue. You know, you see that, you know, even Trump rattled sabers that he was going to take money away from San Francisco, L.A., other places that are sanctuary cities, Denver, et cetera. It never happened, and because that's a legal leap too far even for him. And so the shared revenue also involves federal money. And I think if it were to pass here in Tucson, I think that is a legal challenge that is not a lost cause. But I think the reaction is the threat by the state legislature and by Ducey that if cities don't do what I want, that if you pass something on plastic bags, that we're going to take your money away. And if you pass a sanctuary city initiative, we're going to take your money away. I think it's a response to that threat. I think that this issue has grown in proportion. It's not as simple as a sanctuary city. I support it only because I think it's a statement. It's a pushback on all the things we talked about earlier about immigration, the indignity, the racism, the bigotry. And I think as a statement issue, regardless of what happens in the court, I think it's a necessary expression.
All right. We're going to have to leave it there, Congressman. I'm sorry we're out of time. It's half hour has gone by very quickly. I appreciate you taking the time to talk with our listeners out here on Zona Politics. And thank you so much.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Take care.
All right. And we will be back next week. Thank you so much for tuning in. That's our show for today.
Zona Politics is made possible with the generous support of the Loft Cinema, Tucson's independent movie theater. The Loft features independent, foreign, and documentary films, cult classics, discussions with filmmakers, and much more, including the Loft Film Fest in November. The Loft is located at 3233 East Speedway Boulevard. Showtimes can be found at loftcinema.org. Support for Zona Politics is provided by Hotel Congress in historic downtown Tucson. Hotel Congress is known for its world-famous taproom, Cup Cafe, and Club Congress, offering local and national acts inside and outside on the plaza. More information at hotelcongress.com and 622-8848.